All right, we are going to shift gears right now from the glam rock scene to the guitar rock scene. If you're a fan of, well, like Stevie Ray Vaughan, Billy Gibbons, if you're a fan of the Jimmy Page solo stuff, you'll probably like this guy. In fact, I know you'll like this guy. I never heard of him until I got this advance, and I must say I'm an instant fan. So he's out of the Pennsylvania area. I believe it's Philadelphia he's based. And we're going to talk to him. His name is Jeremy Edge. He is the leader and namesake of the Jeremy Edge Project. But as I always do with new artists, I like to let the music do the talking before the artist. So let's play the opening track. This is a blend, I guess you'd say. He's got a thing called Fire Dancer Intro right on into Fire Dancer. We're going to give them to you both back to back because that's the way the artist wants you to hear them. So Jeremy Edge joining us after this, Fire Dancer.
Yeah.
Dancing in the fire with the fire dancer, and we gave it to you the way the artist wanted you to hear it, with the intro right on into the song, because sequencing is everything to me and most of the musicians we deal with here on the show. This is Midwest Beat on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. I'm Tom Lounges. My guest now, Mr. Jeremy Edge, namesake, guitarist, songwriter, vocalist of the Jeremy Edge Project. And Jeremy, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Thank you. And thanks for playing the intro. That was really cool.
I think, like I said, I think sequencing is very important on an album. As a guy that used to write liner notes and things back in the day and work in studios, I know how hard it is to figure out what order the songs are going to make sense best. And I think the listeners should hear what your vision was. So I was glad to play that intro with it.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Let's talk about this new album. Now, it came out, I want to say, about 2 weeks ago.
Yes. Yeah, it came out about 2 weeks ago, and that song, we just finished a video for, and we're going to be releasing that to the public in a couple weeks. We're just putting the finishing touches on it.
Okay, now I know it's probably too premature at this point to comment, but how is it doing? I mean, we're in a weird time right now. You can't go out and tour and support it as we normally would do. Has radio been embracing it at all? Is it working on the internet? Are you finding that niche?
Actually, we're just, I think we're actually just starting to send this out to programmers. It's always one of those things when something like this is going on, you're wondering what avenue you're going to take, you know, to promote it, you know. But the response online so far, you know, since we first did the press releases on it and put it online, you know, everybody seems to be digging it. And we're just glad to be putting out some new music at a time when everybody's kind of sitting around wondering, okay, what do we do next? You know,
right.
What can we do now, you know?
This is your first solo project, but of course you've had some albums with Candlelight Red that were pretty heavy. And mm-hmm. what is it about this? Why the need to go solo? What are you accomplishing with this that you couldn't do in your other band format?
Well, I mean, I guess some artists, you know, make a conscious effort and say, "Hey, I'm going to go solo. I'm going to go and do something completely different." And for me, you know, I didn't really do anything for about 2 or 3 years. After a bunch of touring and a bunch of doing this, that, and the other thing, I really took some time off. And when I took some time off, I discovered, you know, I was like, you know, I really just want to get back to my roots, which is, you know, classic rock and blues and all the music I grew up on, you know, anywhere from Delta blues to, you know, to Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow, everything in between, you know, and I get back into guitar stuff. So I got back into that, started jamming with some folks and trying to get some band projects off. You know, it kind of nowadays it's one of those things where, you know, bands, even before COVID, used to be able to tour year round, and nobody kind of really does that anymore. It's just the things have changed so much. So it's one of those things where, you know, trying to find 2 or 3 people to find like this marriage that's going to say, hey, we're going to be, you know, embodied in this for the next 5 years, people have lives to live. So, you know, it is one of those things where it seemed to make more sense to make a collaborative effort. You know, I don't really think of it so much as a solo project. I feel like, hey, I'm just the host of the party here.
Okay.
You know, that's what way I like to think of it, because I never, you know, really wanted to be the center of attention, but it is kind of my thing that I heard in my head that I wanted to do. And just finding some good friends who want to come along and jam and do that stuff with me.
Mike Ferretti produced this. A lot of my listeners will be familiar with him from Warren Haynes, another great guitar player.
Right.
How did you and Mike meet up?
We met through Morgan Rose and Clint Lowry of Seven Dust. Because I think back in around 2011, 2012, we toured with Seven Dust, and then we were thinking about doing a second Candlelight Red album in California, and Morgan decided to come on board and produce, and he said, hey, me and Clint found this engineer in New Jersey who's just fantastic. So we went and did, you know, two recordings with Mike, and I stayed in touch with Mike because I was just so impressed. Mike was an apprentice of Jason Corsaro, you might know from like projects like Power Station,
right?
Soundgarden, Super Unknown. So in Mike's just a wizard. I've been a big fan of his for a long time, and I did another little 3-song EP with him with kind of some of the same musicians under the name Black Star Sunrise, and then we came in to do this, and it's pretty much me and Mike producing the whole thing.
What does he bring to the table that enhances your music as someone who is the performer and the writer and arranger? I mean, you've got your hands in a lot of hats you wear for this project. What does Mike do as far as bringing the change of the sound? What's his input?
I think that what he brings is just he allows things to be an open conduit where you feel very comfortable bringing the music out and not getting in the way of that. His job is to interpret and bring those sounds out. And he does that in a way that I haven't seen anyone do. I also like Mike because he has all of this new school tech knowledge. You know, he's one of the fastest guys on the computer I've ever seen when he's editing something or he's trying to mix something down. But at the same time, we did a lot of what we would consider old school recording techniques because, you know, me and him are both of the opinion of a lot of the recordings nowadays just don't have the same kind of thing because everything is done in a small room and we throw it in Pro Tools and then we replace sounds and we simulate environments with reverb, with artificial.
And right.
It's just never as cool as the real thing as getting a big room and a bunch of mics and putting a couple guys in there and jamming.
This has a very live sound. It's very slick, but it's still got that live grit to it. Were you recording in the same room with Brandon and Brett?
Actually, no, because I wasn't aware that they were going to be a part of the project at the time.
Okay.
We started writing songs and with the intention that we're going to have one singer sing the whole record. But we laid drum, guitar, and bass tracks, and then we later did guitar and keyboard overdubs. But we all jammed in the same room for that, me, John, and Dave did. And it was a big open room. And most of the reverb that you're hearing isn't actually reverb. It's the room.
Okay.
So.
Now, will they be touring with you? You've got Brandon Yeagley and Brett Hesla.
Probably not because Brandon has his own project called Crowbot. And I imagine as soon as they're ready to go back on tour, he's going to be a busy guy. And Brett is busy with his own recording studio down in Tennessee.
So what's the plan when you hit the road?
We don't know yet. I don't know. We might bring additional musicians to kind of do some of the album stuff because I can't really sing like those guys. What's interesting is I never considered myself a singer. So I'm like, hey, I can get my friends who are great singers to sing on this. But, you know, we had some songs where I was writing lyrics and vocal melodies, and I'm just like, hey, Mike, roll the tape. I want to lay this down so I can have one of these guys sing it, right? And then Brandon comes in and listens, and Mike are listening, and they're going, dude, why are you going to? No, just keep it.
So you kept the scratch vocals?
Well, not really scratch. It was never really, I didn't really want to sing on the record.
Okay.
I wanted somebody else to sing it because I figured I see myself as a new or a novice singer. And I see those guys as the warriors, the ninjas, you know, but it's kind of cool that, you know, a lot of people like Fire Dancer and Sunrise, the songs that ended up being my vocals. It's cool that, I'm hearing people say his song is connected with them. And, you know, it's very encouraging. I guess it's one of those things where you have an idea in your head and you can put down what you're feeling. And I guess if it's the guy that's feeling it, putting it down, then that connects with listeners no matter where, you know, no matter if you're Bob Dylan or Miles Kennedy.
Right. Right. Now, these songs, were they written during your time with Candlelight Red, or are these written for this project? Were you sitting on them for a while, or are these written?
Some of the riffs I had sat on for a while.
Okay.
And then some of them came about very quickly. Basically, I would just, record things on my phone. I'm not one of those guys that does tons of pre-production. If I have a guitar idea, I just get something out to record it and then listen to it later and then see if I hear lyrics and melody and song structure on top of that,
Mm-hmm. Are you going to keep with the power trio that is so popular with the heavy blues rock sound? You've got a trio here, the three of you.
One of my favorite bands of all time is ZZ Top.
Okay.
I love the power trio, but if you notice, we had a guy come in and do two songs on Hammond B3 organ. We had a lot of simulated keyboards on that I did on guitar throughout the records, but we needed those two songs. So I think down the line, I would love to be able to take out a keyboard player. It's just whether or not we'll have a big enough fan or trailer to put a Hammond B3.
Well, eventually you will, for sure, when everybody starts catching up.
Hey, I'd love the more the merrier. Maybe we even bring out another guitar player. So who knows? Yeah.
I was describing for listeners before we played the song that if you were a fan of certain artists, of course, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Billy Gibbons, the Texas sound is very prevalent, even though you're from more of the East Coast. Who are some of your heroes? I'm hearing a little, maybe a lot of people don't recognize these names, but I'm thinking the Blues Cats will. Lonnie Mack and Roy Buchanan, a little bit of their sound in you. Were you listening to either of those?
Well, yeah, kind of. It was weird growing up when I did as a kid. My dad was a musician, so he pushed a lot of stuff on me. And some of it I got at the time, some of it I didn't get. But I remember being, I think I was probably 9 years old when I heard Stevie Ray Vaughan. And at the time, he was still alive, and he was incredible. And mm-hmm. Even though this sounded like some of the music my dad listened to, I was just drawn to the guitar playing instantly because I was listening to all this other metal stuff and I was popular at the time, but I heard that and we connected over that. And so my dad and my brother-in-law, we took me to see him. It was like, I think one of the last shows or one of the last tours he did before he passed. And as a kid, I got to see him and it was 20, 30 feet away from me. But the interesting thing was, when my dad heard Stevie Ray Vaughan, he says, "Oh, he sounds like Lonnie Mack." And I said, "Who's Lonnie Mack?" So he brings out LP records of Lonnie Mack,
mm-hmm.
the guy with the flying V. I was like, "Hey, this is pretty awesome." So we get to the show, and I distinctly remember my dad looking at the bill going, "Lonnie Mack is the opener."
Wow. What a show to see.
Yeah, so yeah, that was a little piece of my indoctrination into guitar rock was getting to see Stevie Ray Vaughan and Lonnie back at a very, very young age.
I was turned on to Lonnie and to Roy Buchanan by Ted Nugent. Ted said, "You want to hear a real good guitar player? This is the guy you need to listen to." And I rediscovered so many things because of going to Lonnie and then following it back. Another artist that I can hear a little bit of perhaps in your style, more modern, is Zakk Wylde, a little Black Label in there. Plus, I mean, even the Pride and Glory stuff on songs like Sunrise.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think so. One of the things I also do is I jam with some guys and we do Ozzy and Sabbath covers.
Oh, okay. I can hear that.
We do that for fun. So, I mean, I grew up on Black Sabbath and, actually, Tony Iommi is one of my favorite guitar players. I just love his feeling and the lyricalness of his notes. But yeah, I always like Zach's playing, especially in the first little era of his, because I think there was a lot of Southern rock and blues influence in there. There's a little country, there's a little everything. And the interesting things I always tell people about Sabbath, Ozzy, all that stuff, is believe it or not, everybody considers that to be like one-dimensional heavy metal, but you really, to play those guys' stuff, you almost have to have knowledge of country, blues, southern rock, classical, jazz. Like there's all that stuff in there,
mm-hmm.
That those guys did. And I think that, that kind of stuff where, Zeppelin, you know, all these bands who were a melting pot of influences. That's always been my thing. I think it's so much cooler to have a big plethora of musical influences to keep things interesting than to have just, you know, well, it sounds just like this.
Right. Cool, yeah. Well, this album shows you're more than a one trick pony. There's a gumbo of styles here. And that said, I'd like to play something else from the album. You picked the song. What would you like listeners to hear?
Wow. It's hard to pick one. Let's see. I actually would say, why don't you play, so to give them something a little different, laid back, Lies is really cool.
Okay.
I think that one features Brandon from Crobot showing off some of his Zeppelin-esque blues chops. And we also brought in Josh Smith, who's a phenomenal blues guitar player that is really hot right now.
Okay.
He did second guitar on that, and we trade licks on it, and it just ended up being awesome. I'm really honored that he agreed to play on the record. Him and Joe Bonamassa just finished producing the new Eric Gales record. So it's just, you know, I'm just in awe of all those dudes. So
all right.
Really, well, kind of stoked that he played on my record.
This is Midwest Beat on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thanks for listening and supporting NPR. And this is a great new artist that I know we're going to hear a lot more from. In fact, you're going to hear some more coming up right now. This is Lies. It's off his debut album, The Jeremy Edge Project. Take it away.
You're trying to do to me. Ooh. But still I try to hold on, cause I don't wanna be alone. Ooh. This is heaven in disguise. Time you
Lies. New music, Jeremy Edge Project, off that self-titled debut album, out about 2 weeks now. And Jeremy Edge is my guest, and I got to say, that is some tasty play in there.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
I can see why that's a favorite of yours on a, on an album that is rock solid from start to finish. This record, as I mentioned in the beginning, I'm a big fan of hearing how artists decided to sequence their album and why they feel one song leads to another. And this one is, as I said, is a kind of a gumbo of styles. You've got Sing My Blues, you've got Lies, you've got the soft ending with Sunrise. How involved were you in the sequencing, or was that more of Mike's wheelhouse?
No, I guess you could say I just went back and forth with the files and just kind of, you know, you have an idea of, like, you want the album to start with a song that grabs people's attention. Then you want to slow it down and build it back up. I actually kind of sequenced in mind, hoping that we would go to vinyl, which we did.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of growing up, having two older sisters and a lot of inherited vinyl collection, I always kind of think of, well, what would side A be, you know, what would be the first track on side B, you know? So, you know, I guess you could say that you just played the two tracks that are first on side A and side B on the vinyl.
Okay. So what is side B's opening track on the vinyl?
The one you just played.
Oh, Lies. Okay. Lies. Mm-hmm. Okay. When is the vinyl out already? Because I know I've seen it available on CD. I don't know if the vinyl is done.
Yeah, it sure is. Everywhere that's available on CD, it's available right off of, you can find the links right off my jeremyh.com or my Facebook page.
Okay.
It's also, I believe, it's up on Amazon and Target. A bunch of the online retailers have it up.
I have two brick-and-mortar record stores, and I would love to carry the vinyl on this because we specialize in vinyl. Who's distributing you?
It's Deco Entertainment.
Deco Entertainment. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll have to look into that. But tasty, tasty stuff here. You know, a lot of guitarists, as I mentioned, Ted Nugent turned me on to Lonnie Mack and to Roy Buchanan. And, of course, Stevie Ray introduced a new generation to Dick Dale. Jeff Beck gave us Cliff Gallup, the great guitar player of Gene Vincent's Blue Caps. Who is a guitarist that you would like to turn someone on to when you get to that platform where you're of that ilk and you can say, look, I appreciate you liking me, but go back and listen to this guy. Who would that be?
Well, I don't know. I doubt I'll get popular before he does. I think he's already pretty popular. But when I talk to people who are maybe not really falling, you know, who is really hot on, you know, on the up-and-coming list, you know, which he's been up-and-coming for a while, the guy that blows me away that not everybody knows about, I think, is Philip Seth.
Okay.
I heard that guy play, and my jaw is just on the floor. Like, he's on 11. I mean,
wow.
And everybody I've turned on to that guy is just like, man, this guy's from another planet. He's amazing. So, hands down, you know, without going to the usual suspects, Philip Seth, you know, and, you know, like you just heard Josh on my record. Josh Smith is an amazing guitar player. You guys got to hear him play everything from blues to country and jazz. It's amazing. There's a lot of great guys out there that are just, I'm just in awe. It's a really, maybe it's not mainstream like it was decades ago where mm-hmm. you could turn on the television, but man, there's just some incredible talent out and there's some great guitar players out there right now.
So how long of a project was this in the making? When did you decide, okay, it's time to start my solo? You went in, you got in the studio with Mike, you decided the guys that are playing from start to finish, and you said, I'm going to do this. I have my songs. How long of a process was it? And were you done by the time COVID hit, or were you still in the,
yeah,
in the
we
making
were, yeah,
stages?
This album was done. I think we were finished recording fall of last year. And
okay.
Yeah, I mean, this project was almost a year in the making just because we worked on the basic tracks and then we went through a thing where a vocalist kind of left to do other things. And then we were saying, who are we going to find to finish the album? So then we got, you know, some guest musicians and vocalists to collaborate with us. And then we mixed the record, you know. And then Mike was, you know, me and Mike go back a while, so it was a favor. And I got Mike in between his major label projects, I guess you could say. You know, he mixed it, you know, in his spare time, which is really cool because, I mean, I think he mixed my stuff kind of like he would want to hear it, and I think, you know, his ear is just great.
Being as you were done that early, were you hesitant to release it? A lot of artists have held back their records, hoping that COVID goes away so they can tour, yet you released it right in the thick of it. Was that a conscious decision? Or did you say, well, maybe we should hold it, or the heck with it, I want to get it out there?
Yeah, I think for me it was a conscious decision because, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, there's always there's a double-edged sword.
Mm-hmm.
So something I've done for 2 or 3 years now is, you know, every once in a while I'll get on Facebook or Instagram and I'll be in my bedroom. It's like, hey, I'm going to play guitar for a few minutes, you know? But now the COVID hit, it's kind of everybody's doing that, which is cool. You know, it's really cool to be able to see Norah Jones performing in her living room. I mean, that's what's not cool about that. Or to see John Mayer bored at 2 a.m. gets on Instagram and talks to you for an hour and plays guitar. Like, it's just amazing. But at the same time, I feel like people need music. They need content. They need, if we can't go to shows, then, you know, it's cool to discover some new songs. So I think, for me, you know, I like to try to do what everybody isn't doing, you know, because, you know, that in that way, at least, hopefully I can contribute something, you know, that, you know, if I think putting out some fresh music now is what I'd like to be doing, because, you know, I don't really want to just be that guy who's waiting and waiting and waiting to release stuff in the tour and just, you know, doing online shows and online, you know, living room performances to tie people over. I'd rather try to put out as much music as I can. And also while this is going on, I'm trying to write as much music I can and, you know, you get ready for the next one.
Mm-hmm. With the tours hopefully starting soon, you've got 10 tracks, 8 if you count the intros, Breathe and Fire Dancer intro. How much older stuff would you be playing or will you play? Will you do anything from Candlelight Red or will you be debuting new music written since this first album?
Everything's up in the air. I mean, all of those things are on the table. And, you know, John and Ray have been jamming covers and standards and off the wall stuff too. So we can pull some of that stuff out. There'll probably be tons of surprises, you know?
Okay. Is Candlelight done for you? I mean, I haven't heard anything in a while. Is the band gone?
You know, it's interesting. You know, we all kind of talk and we see each other often. Actually, you know, the last show that I played was kind of like an outdoor show we did this summer, and Ryan came out and sang a few songs with us.
Hmm.
So I guess for Candlelight, for us, it's one of those things where you need... it became like a big rock band, not a huge rock band, but big enough where, you know, there's rehearsals, there's equipment, it's a machine to get that out there. And at the time, you know, basically the other guys are doing other things. So it takes a lot. You know, it would take someone wanting to do a full scale tour and just really get out there and do it again. So I'm not going to ever rule it out because I think we have great chemistry and I'm proud of what we did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But for right now, we just don't have any plans to do anything with it yet. You know, at some point, everybody might get up the edge and call each other and say, hey, let's do this. Let's start rehearsing and let's do something. But it just hasn't happened yet. So I guess we'll wait for the right time.
Have the Candlelight fans migrated to the Jeremy Edge project? Are you seeing a crossover?
Some, yeah. there's some fans that are kind of like, okay, this is different. and then there's some folks that are kind of going, well, this isn't as different as I thought it would be. You know, I heard you were doing something bluesy, so I pictured, I mean, they were probably picturing B.B. King.
Right,
I was like,
right.
No, this is still very much a rock record. You know, it's just a lot different, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of heaviness to this, but then there's also a lot of intricacies and blues. I mean, like I said, Sing My Blues is a great tune. Sunrise is a great song, completely different. And that said, there is a song that stands out as being different called Indifferent. It's got a kind of an Asian Eastern kind of groove to it. Tell me about that. I'd like to play that one.
I think my first exposure to Middle Eastern music was probably Kashmir. You hear that and you're like, what's that sound? And then as you grow older and experience more music, I'm always into those kind of things. So I wanted something that had kind of a gypsy-esque, Middle Eastern kind of feel to it. But whenever I do that, I mean, if you notice, the song is in a waltz. It's in a 3/4.
Yeah.
Just like a blues song would be. And it also has like almost like a 12-bar blues style turnaround. But it has kind of a Middle Eastern feel. I pictured it as kind of like something that like the Mars Volta might do.
Oh, okay.
I like some of their stuff, you know. That's kind of what I was going for. So, okay. And then I think the solo ended up being, I went for something more minimalistic, but it came out very Ritchie Blackmore-esque, I think. You know, I was just trying to play behind the beat and in the pocket as much as possible. And then Brett, who used to sing for Dark New Day, Burgos Malow, I think he really hit it out of the park vocally. And I think for fans of his, they got to check this out because I think he just really went outside the box and showed people what he can do. I think it's awesome the job he did on that.
All right, well, let's debut it right now. This is, again, the Jeremy Edge Project off the self-titled debut album. This is Indifferent. We'll be back with Jeremy after this.
Ready to ground all these bones coming down. Like rain on you. What can you do with some product of time? Targets all in line. Bring pain to you. But is it all true?
something different called Indifferent. That's Jeremy Edge, the Jeremy Edge Project. Indifference, one of the tracks on this debut album that serves to impress. And I'll tell you, there's not a sleeper on this record. It's a strong debut. And Jeremy, they always say that you've got your whole lifetime to make that first record. This, of course, not your first. You had Candlelight Red out there. But looking back, now that it's in your hand, now that it's pressed on vinyl and it's going in stores and it's in stores, what are your thoughts looking back? Anything you'd want to change, or are you happy with the way it turned out?
No, I mean, I think I'm happy with the way it turned out because you really can't go back and redo things because it would just ruin what was good about it. You know, mm-hmm. You always think, well, you know. I probably always envisioned, like, if I ever did a solo record, it would be very indulgent guitar stuff, you know,
right.
And me having fun with that. But just being a team player and being in so many bands for the years, I think we ended up making more of a rock and song record. There's guitar playing in there, you know.
Right. It isn't self-indulgent, though. I think that's refreshing. I think a lot of people expect that when they say, oh, it's a guitar player's band.
Right, right. I mean, at the end of the day, I got to do what serves the song. And, I think there'll be plenty of chances for me to come out with a instrumental guitar record or something mm-hmm. like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, I like to try to find something that's it's a good song, you know, and on guitar play what serves the song, you know.
Are you a fan of instrumental guitar work as solo albums? Okay.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. I mean, I grew up as a kid, you know, hearing the tail end of that, some of that, you know, some of the shred stuff, you know, and even some of the, you know, the country records, bluegrass records where it's instrumental and,
right.
Classical music, you know, a lot of classical music is instrumental. And I think it's cool too. I think it has its place too.
I remember the one that turned me on to instrumentals was Ronnie Montrose. I was a big fan of Ronnie, he did Open Fire. And that was a great record. Great record. Town Without Pity, his version of that. Mick Ronson did a solo, Slaughter. On Slaughter mm-hmm. Avenue or something it was called. That was another one. And I started to embrace the guitar in a different way. You know, we grow up with rock and roll. And it's like, yeah, rock and roll guitar, you know, turn it up. But you get the nuances and the subtleties, and you let the music breathe, and the dynamics really can come out. And I would love to hear more instrumental from you, only because I'm hearing little tidbits, little appetizers of it in this record.
Yeah, there's, some of the stuff that really caught my attention, outside of the really shreddy stuff was, like Eric Johnson's Avia Musicom.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
of course, that's got a lot of impressive guitar playing too, but there's a lot of melody and just texture on that. That was, you know, amazing. I remember, you know, it's funny, I'm a big fan of what he's doing now. But I remember there was a point where Richie Kotzen put out his first album. I can't remember what it was called. It was like an instrumental record where he was using the Telecaster. He was using single coil pickups, and he was mainly playing with his fingers.
Hmm.
And I remember that was just such a great thing. But I love what he's doing now with his stuff and the Winery Dog. It's like very soulful. I'm way into that.
You mentioned that your dad was a musician. Is this something that's in the DNA? When did you decide, this is what I want to do for a living? And was your dad a guitar player?
I would say, you know, when I first saw live music, I wanted to do it. But I think my sister Karen started taking guitar lessons when I was a kid, and I wanted to do whatever she was doing. So I stuck with it. But my dad used to be a radio DJ.
Okay.
And he also used to play in bands. He also was partner in a studio called Mark Five Sandcastle. And he was friends with some guys who went on to play with Gene Vincent.
Oh, I had
Bobby Jones.
Okay.
Bobby Jones, Johnny Meeks. And my dad wrote a song called Dance to the Bop. And it was a number 7 hit for Gene Vincent. And I think actually Gene and my dad's friends, Bobby and Johnny, played that song on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Wow.
But yeah, he traveled around the country, you know, playing in bar bands, cover bands. He told me he was the Palomino Club in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Him and my mom moved out there for several years, and his band was a house band at the Palomino Club. And he said, you know, during those years, he met everybody. He met Little Richard, Roy Orbison.
Wow.
So my dad had some great, great stories. He was definitely from another era. I was kind of like, I was the last child. I was the accident. but it gave me quite an advantage because like I have such a, you know, he could bring all of that music from the early 1900s all the way to the 50s and 60s to me. And, you know, everything that I've experienced, you know, you've got 100 years of music that I've been exposed to. And, you know, I love the old stuff just as much as, you know, the new stuff, you know.
I'll tell you, it's great heritage to have a Gene Vincent connection to your music. I'm a big fan of Gene, and he was the bop king, him and Eddie Cochran, great players.
Yeah, it was so wild, you know, kind of reading about my heroes like Ritchie Blackmore and Ronnie James Dio talking about Gene Vincent and the Blue Caps.
Right,
wait a minute, those were my dad's friends.
Yeah.
And they're saying, go listen to that.
And for those that want to hear more of Gene's stuff, I suggest, if you're a guitar fan, Jeff Beck and the Garage album. I can't think of the actual title, but it's a tribute to Cliff Gallup. Good stuff. Jeremy, thank you so much for your time. We are running tight. I'm going to play another song. How do people keep up with you? Is there a website for you?
Yeah, go to jeremy.com, jeremyedge.com, and that has some links there. On Facebook, I'm Jeremy Medge Music. Same thing on Instagram, and on YouTube, just search the Jeremy Edge Project.
All right. I am perplexed at what to close with. I wanted to get to some more music, but we've had such a good time talking. What would you like to close? Pick a song.
Let's see. One of the songs that people haven't been talking about as much, I think is really cool, is Holding In.
Okay.
That Brett Hassler sang on. That track is like one of the probably the heaviest song on the record. And speaking of Blackmore, we were trying to get that whole era of like Deep Purple, Perfect Strangers, or Black Sabbath, Heaven and Hell, you know, Aldin Nova, you know, some of those. It's like that. I consider like the late 70s, like a lost era of rock where people think there wasn't much good music coming out. It's like,
right.
There was some great music coming out of there. So,
well, we're going to do that.
See what you think.
All right. This is Breathe Into Holding In, and this has been Jeremy Edge Project. Check them out online, and look for the album, vinyl, and CD in stores. Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on.
All righty. Bye-bye, everyone. Adios. Shepnick coming up.